You are listening to WRUU Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM and WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Parenting Room 101. I'm your host, Christy Sanborn, and I'm here joined today with a really incredible woman. Her name is Deborah Porter Glenn. She's awesome. Let me introduce her to you, and I can't wait to bring her on today to share all of her goodness. Deborah is a devoted wife. She's a boy mom of two adult sons. She's a creative life coach. She's an artist. She's a former college art professor. She's a volunteer. She's a Savannah local. She's also an Aquarius. Welcome to the show, Deborah.
Good morning. It's an honor to be here, and happy rainy Savannah day.
Oh, girls, it is rainy today, but it's so pretty. You know, I can't help myself when I come downtown. I have to take at least one picture just because the trees are just so rich.
Oh, it's always beautiful.
It is. It is. It's so nice to have you today.
I'm thrilled to be here and to be talking to you as a friend and a colleague, and this is an exciting moment.
It is. It is. It's so great. I can't wait to get into it. So let's get to it. I want to talk to you a little bit about your name first, Deborah. Do you know what the spiritual meaning of your name is?
There are different kinds of meanings for my name. There's an Arabic meaning, which means dust. There is a Hebrew meaning, which is like a bumblebee. And also, Deborah was a wild woman in the Old Testament.
Yes.
So I think I'm a dusty, bumblebee, wild woman.
Fabulous. I looked it up too, and I did see B as the number one meaning, but it also said that your name represents wisdom and courage to lead.
I hope I can live up to that.
I feel like that is you. It is.
Well, thank you.
It absolutely is. You definitely carry yourself like a leader. I will say that.
And it takes one to know one.
Thank you. What a beautiful compliment. Thank you. So I want to talk a little bit with you about wisdom and lessons learned. Let's start with this.
Let's dive in.
Let's dive. First of all, congratulations on being married for 30 years.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's, you just get up and decide, this is my person every day, and we're going to mentally and physically hold hands and get through whatever comes in front of us.
Yeah, I love how you said mentally and physically. That was really beautiful.
Well, because thank you.
You're right, and that's what it is. It is mentally, and it is a choice. I always like to tell people that, especially once in a while when I hear people not saying very nice things about their spouse, which I do hear often. And I always tell them, you know, that person that you come home to every day, they choose you every day. They've chosen you out of 7 billion people. It's you. So remember that, you know, and how you feel about them.
And it is a daily choice. And
yes,
I've learned over time, it's not a good idea to badmouth the people in your life, because how you feel in the moment is going to change in the next moment. So it's better to leave a nice karmic wake behind you than to put all these things out there. And it's okay to use friends as sounding boards if you are in a tough time or you have family things, but also remember, you're leaving that particular footprint with them, and sometimes you need to go back and correct it.
Wow, excellent. And you're right. I want to share this with everybody. It's a quote from you. Be creative every day.
Oh,
so cute.
Yes, that's been sort of my little catchphrase and slogan. And when I stopped teaching. I taught for a number of years, and then I helped my husband with his CPA business. He worked for the county, and then he went out on his own. And I said, listen, I'll just help you set up the desks, and then I'll help you do this. And 20 years later, we worked very well together. We had an arrangement in the office. He wore the trousers in the office, and I wore them at home. Mm. And a lot of times, our clients never figured out we were married, because a lot of times, no one wants the wife in the office. So it worked out, and it worked out as dovetailing this into parenting. At that point, I have two sons. They're now 28 and 24, and they are in school. So to have a full-time job, I had to be able to leave to pick them up at 3 o'clock. So it really worked out well.
I bet. And you're right. Being there to pick the kids up at school, I feel like, is such a blessing.
It's their one of their most important moments in the day, because they get in the car and you have that little window of opportunity when they can kind of dump and download and release whatever it is that happened that day, because once they get home, they kind of evaporate into their own little spaces. So carpooling is a weird little time. I started a book a number of years ago, which I didn't end up finishing, called Carpool Queens, where I was collecting stories about the moments that happen in carpooling.
So really? It's,
yes, I may go back to it eventually.
I like that idea. That's really great. It kind of reminds me of maybe like an Uber situation too, like the conversations that go on in the back of an Uber that people hear constantly, right? That maybe a lot of people wouldn't expect.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, that's cool. I like that idea. So I want to know what that means to you. What does that quote mean? Be creative every day.
People are funny when you use the word creativity. And being an art teacher for an art professor, I was at SCAD and various other places for a number of years, you get used to being around students who consider themselves creative. But one of the first things I found, which is the difference in teaching freshmen and seniors, is a lot of students would come in and they say, oh, I'm not creative. And I said, well, did you learn to write your name? And they said, yeah, that was a long time ago. I said, well, that's drawing.
Wow.
Writing your name is drawing. So if you can learn to write your name, you can learn to draw. So that's what I would tell art students. But for other people, everyone is creative. The human animal is creative. Everything you learn, you synthesize on a daily basis, whether it's how am I going to tie my shoes today? Or I had this conversation yesterday with my older son, who is looking towards being a physical therapist, and he's doing some job shadowing stuff. And we talked about creativity. In that moment, someone comes in to PT. You have to be able to extrapolate what's going on with them. What do they need? What do I know? How can I work with this particular individual? All of that is incredibly creative. It's drawing, it's lateral thinking, it's not vertical thinking. The same thing, you mentioned your husband was big deal athlete.
Yes.
An athlete, and this, so creativity and flow are the same thing. When an athlete is really in their muscle memory mode, they are in flow. And to be that successful moment, you have to have all of that information in your head. Oh, I need to cut to the right. I need to cut to the left. I know this particular play, whether it's hockey or football, or that is extraordinary in the moment creative thinking. Right. So everyone's creative, whether they're a surgeon or an athlete or in a bakery. Oh, I've run out of this particular ingredient. Maybe I can substitute that. That is creativity. Mm-hmm. And that is what has made human beings reach the heights they have. Animals are creative too, in a different way.
Yes, in what way would you say?
Well, if you look at the animal kingdom, how does a bird know how to build a nest?
I was just thinking, that's where my mind went, to the bird nest, because that is so
how
creative.
How do they know? No one is necessarily teaching them. You're born in a little nest. What do you look around and go, this is 3 inches wide and 2 inches tall?
Yeah.
So,
yes, that's a great example. It's funny that my mind went there too. I love that. We're on the same level here. So you have been an artist and a photographer, professor and a coach. How have those roles shaped the way that you help others?
Part of teaching is having enthusiasm and sharing and loving what you do. So I feel very grateful and lucky to have been able to take all my interests and work them in different ways over my different kind of career paths. I started out in my 20s. I was in New York City. I was doing book publishing and magazines back when that was a big industry.
Yes.
And then went to graduate school and then ended up teaching and then worked for my husband. And I'm here now. And it's all just sort of a mindset. And again, if you think about things creatively, like today is a unbelievable opportunity. I've never done a radio show.
Yes.
Like, oh my gosh, this is cool and a little bit scary and different. And here we are. So just keep taking chances.
Would you say that creativity can be scary at times when it's something
creativity
new?
Can be very scary because creativity is taking two or three known concepts and then putting them together into something new. Whether it's someone like Bill Gates, who started out with, oh, there are these funny pieces of technology, maybe I can put them together and create something new. Or to go back to the athlete model, oh gosh, I know this play, I know that play, but I'm seeing something happening in front of me and I can take those and meld them into something new. So creativity is also, I think of it, and this is probably a weird way of thinking, as a survival technique. Hmm. Because if you're stranded on an island and you don't have enough creativity to figure out, maybe I need to get those coconuts, or maybe I need to, you know, do something to find fresh water. That's creative thinking.
Wow. And we all have it. We just have to tap into it.
Yep. And we all use it in different ways. Although a lot of people don't recognize that that's what they're doing. Like, oh, I'm going to put on this color of nail polish. That's a creative choice.
It is. Or I'm going to rearrange my living room today.
Yeah.
That's fabulous.
I'm going to clean out that dreaded Tupperware drawer.
I have to mention this real quick. I have a very good old friend that we've been friends for over 20 years. And I remember we went shopping. I was in my 20s. She was at the time also the same age. And we were at like a Burlington Coat Factory or something. And I have all these clothes in my hand. I used to be a shopaholic. I'm recovered.
Well, you look beautiful.
Thanks, girl. I used to be obsessed with shopping, but thank you. But back then, I would just grab things that were, you know, catchy, like, oh, I like that, I like this, I like that, and I would just have a full cart. And she said to me one day, Christy, have you ever considered putting an outfit together and then buying that instead
there
of just
go.
All this random stuff? And I was like, what? What do you mean? She goes, well, yeah, look, what are you going to do with those pants that you have in the cart? They don't go with anything.
That's creative thinking.
Fabulous. And I'm telling you, I remember like it was yesterday because I never thought that way. My mind never made sense like that the way hers did. She's a very organized person. Everything in her closet is in order, right?
Is the exact moment we're talking about when you're talking about flow.
Yes.
Whether it's flow for an athlete or flow, because what happened to you in that moment was your brain opened a little door to a new thought, like, oh, I can make an outfit. That is a creative flow moment.
It was, because I still do that now. It's like, if I go out, I don't just buy those pink cowboy boots because they're in my size.
Because they're fabulous.
They are fabulous. But it's like, well, what are they going to go with at home? I can't leave the store with just that. I might as well get a shirt to go with it and some earrings so I have something, right, that makes sense. It was such great advice. So a lot of us are walking around armed with this beautiful creative energy.
Yep.
And maybe we just don't know how to express it.
And it will come out in different ways.
Mm.
Like for you, you weren't thinking that particular thought, but something jogged your thinking into it. So that those kind of little flow moments, and it may not seem like, oh, an epically big thing, but the fact is it changed a way that you think.
Yes.
And a way that you live.
Mm-hmm.
Your
yes.
purchasing patterns.
Very much.
So that's how creativity works. And sometimes it comes from one source or another, whether it's a friend or you just wake up in the middle of the night and go, oh, I have a solution for XYZ problem.
Yes.
So,
can we talk about in childhood with your creative endeavors?
yes.
Let's jump to there for a minute. I'd love to know, how do you incorporate creative activities with your kids, or how did you back then?
Well, my mother, as a parent, we did a lot of stuff. We did a lot of creative stuff together. She was a stay-at-home mom. She mm-hmm. was a traditional stay-at-home mom.
Mm-hmm.
And we did everything from make Christmas presents for our relatives to gardening. We had a 1,000-square-foot garden in Massachusetts to making jam and jellies. We had a grape arbor, so we made grape. So it was something, it was just a part of that growing up in New England, that New England pioneer, you're going to fix it yourself, and if you can't, you're going to figure out how. So it was, that was a sort of a mindset. And I think with parenting, one of the things that a critical thing a kid needs to learn is that they can make mistakes. Mistakes are okay. And sometimes the mistakes that you make lead you into the directions you need to go to. And these are the kinds of things you only see in hindsight. So letting a child, okay, maybe I put my shoes on the wrong feet, or I broke the thing I was making, or those kinds of moments where, hey, you can rebuild this. Or, hey, it's okay if your shoes are on the wrong feet. You can switch them later. So being a creative parent creates joy for a child, joy for a parent, and also it teaches them forgiveness for mistakes, and it teaches them independence. So they're allowed to try to think something through. Problem solving is the number one thing that any human needs to learn, and it's a weird process. So if you can kind of practice problem solving on a small scale, like maybe a kid for dinner, would you rather have a grilled cheese sandwich or macaroni and cheese?
Yes, always options. Definitely.
And then they have to think it through. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of options.
No, not overwhelming.
But right. Then they feel like they're in control.
Yes. I love that. When my son was young, probably about 1 or 2 years old, I used to bring snow in from outside in New Jersey.
You're gonna love, cool.
You're going to love this. Because he was a baby, you know, and we lived in New Jersey. We got a lot of snow, and it was hard to be home all day sometimes in that snow. So I would go outside with these big glass measuring cups, right, Deborah? And I would scoop the snow and bring it in, and I would get, like, all the metal measuring spoons and, like, wooden spoons. And I would set up his little table with the snow, and then I would set it up with, like, warm water, and so he could, like, have his little matchbox cars, and he would dip them, and just hours of fun bringing the snow inside.
Mm-hmm. That is, I've never even heard of that. That is so ridiculously creative.
Oh, I have goosebumps. I have all these pictures, too, of him sitting at the table, like, playing in it. And I just don't know if a lot of people have done that or thought of it, but you can always bring
it in. I've never thought of that, but what a great idea.
Yeah, bring it inside. You don't have to just go outside.
You could, that is, when you talk about whether someone's creative or not, that is a hugely creative moment, because not only are you being creative, but you're showing him how to be creative. So, hey, you can bring the outside inside. You can bring the inside outside. So these are all different sensory. So the other thing is, creativity is also about shifting your senses, whether it's seeing or smelling or tasting or hearing. These are all, sometimes we get in ruts. And so jolting or bumping or just having a different sensory experience is a whole different way of interpreting things on a creative level.
I love that you mentioned the sensory thing, because I would think, correct me here if I'm wrong, but would that help you if you're blocked in some way? Because I know that you do help people that are blocked.
Absolutely.
So share a little bit, if you wouldn't mind, about what that looks like in a sensory way.
Everyone has creative blocks. It's a normal part. I think of, like, if you visualize a Roomba, one of those little vacuum cleaners, and it's stuck in a corner going bong, 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 bong in the corner. That's what a creative block kind of looks like and feels like. Sometimes just doing something different, specifically going outside, where when you're outside, you're impacted by sunlight or wind or air or the temperature, or today, rain.
Yes.
Shifting your sensory perception will shift the information, and that becomes a creative transition.
Well, will you say that again? I like that, what you said. Shifting
a sensory perception will shift how the information is being resolved and looked at. People say, psychologists will say, hey, if you're having a stressful moment, stand up and jump up and down for a minute or two, because just physically doing that literally puts you into super present tense, so you can't have those rambling thoughts that go round and round, you know, ruminating. Ruminating is the Roomba. I think they named it for ruminating.
I think they did, or they should have. When you say that, it brings me back to a memory. I've heard a lot of inventors or people in charge of, you know, big companies, a lot of times they'll sit at a table trying to come up with the answer to a problem, and they'll get up from their seat and walk around to the other side of the table and sit down. Oh, that's okay. No big deal. No big deal. It happens. Usually it's me. But have you heard that before?
That
you get up and sit in another chair.
What you're talking about is brainstorming. Mm-hmm. And brainstorming is actually a formal process of how to think through a system. I can't even talk. how to think through a system that needs to be thought in different ways.
Okay.
So in advertising, in, well, pretty much any business, part of brainstorming is part of what goes into whether it's marketing or new product development, or it's taking a situation and rethinking it in different patterns. Brainstorming is something in coaching that whether you're a life coach or this kind of coach or whatever, brainstorming is crucial for basically sitting down, taking a moment, saying, I'm going to, and sometimes I think about the word, and it's like, maybe it shouldn't be brainstorming. Maybe it should be brain rainbowing or brain.
Yeah.
Because sometimes right. A storm is not a great thing.
Yeah.
But basically, it's just that technique of jotting down, whether it's free thinking or you're jotting down ideas or go outside, walk around and see what pops into your brain. But for the time being, brainstorming is the word.
Yes.
That comes to mind.
I love it. Well, hopefully everybody out there listening, maybe they haven't done that in a while. Do you think some people avoid brainstorming?
I think sometimes people think it's scary.
Mm-hmm.
Or back to the original creativity idea, they don't think they're creative. Or that it's sometimes overwhelming. And you can do that in very small ways that you can kind of sneak up on this. Like say to yourself, okay, I'm mowing the yard and it's not really working this way. What if I try that way? That's like mini brainstorming. It doesn't have to be big brainstorming.
So what I'm hearing you say is just take actions, even if they're small actions.
Yes, take actions. And even if an action is just a thought, like I'm going to think this through differently, or I'm going to see what other information I can find.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love talking to you about creativity. It's so fun. So let's jump into a little bit about parenting and parenting boys. You are a boy mom.
Oh, gosh. Love it.
I know. It's so neat. Let's jump into that. Did you find out the gender of your boys before they were born both times?
I did, because being a New England person originally, I was too impatient. And I really, it just made a difference to me to make them suddenly real people.
Mm.
So yes.
And your husband was on board to find out both
yep.
times?
Mm-hmm. He was. We were both thrilled. Well, I was 37 and 41.
Wow.
So I didn't want a lot of mystery.
I love that. I was also 37 with my son.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, and also it allowed me to pick a name and sort of think about who this person would be. So for me, these are very private parenting decisions. So I respect however people go about this. Sometimes people like the open up the Easter egg and look who's mm-hmm. here, surprise. And some yeah. people like me, I'm probably too much of a planner.
Right.
I wanted to know.
Yeah, but it's nice when your partner's on board with that.
Yes, yes. And that is definitely something that you have to respect your partner. And if they say, mm-hmm. let's wait, then you negotiate that.
Then you negotiate. Great word. What do you remember most about the day that your first son was born?
That was a particularly difficult, it was a very easy pregnancy. It was not an easy delivery. I should have had an emergency C-section. I did not. The doctor went out and came back too late to perform that, so he had to do other things, which caused damage to my son, who came out blue and with no heart rate and ended up staying in the neonatal unit for a week. Thank you to modern medicine. I was deeply grateful that I was at a hospital that had those emergency services. And ironically, the woman who was the nurse on duty, I don't remember her last name. Her name was Linda. My mother's name is Linda. My mother, Linda, was there. And that one particular nurse really saved my son's life. And it's funny because years later, about 8-10 years later, I was at a Boy Scout thing with my husband and my two sons, Sam and Teddy, and I'm standing next to, it was Sunday morning, standing next to this lovely lady drinking our cocoa, and she said something about being a nurse at a particular hospital, and I said, oh, and then she said her name, and I said, this is really funny, but are you by any chance, she looked at me and she said, did your son survive?
Oh my goodness.
And I looked at her, and this still makes hair stand up on my arm. Oh, and I said, he's right there playing with your son. So she never knew whether or not this individual survived. And it was sort of one of those, like, oh, you know, the angels are singing. Wow. That we were put in the same space to have this conversation. So that's one of my, like, cool, funny little private parenting moments.
It's beautiful.
And she as a mom didn't know. So it was very nice that we could share that moment.
It was. And she had been thinking about it all that time.
It was astonishing. Because my son was, I don't know, 6 or 8. So this was a long time.
So when they released your son from the hospital after a week, you said, in the NICU?
I didn't get to pick him up for a week. That was not great.
No. It must have been really awful. And then when you were able to take him home, everything was clear? Like, he's good, he's okay, don't worry? Or what did that look like?
We had babies can't... So what had happened was he had also seizured at birth, and it turns out that we didn't know this until he was in a car accident in 11th grade, that he actually has epilepsy. So in the process of him being delivered, he had had a brain thing happen. So it was, which causes him, he has a spot on his brain on the right-hand side, which your left brain controls the right brain controls the left. So, and this was a hard thing as a parent to learn, that my 11th grade 17-year-old son had had this lifelong scenario. And one of the conversations he and I had was, I feel terrible, you know, I never saw you have a seizure. And he said, oh, I had one or two, I think, as a kid, but I thought they were just kind of like my superpower.
Wow.
So that was a very hard private moment. It took me conversations with him and my husband to be like, wow, what kind of parents are we? But the thing about epilepsy is there are many different kinds of epilepsies, and there are many different kinds of triggers. So in his particular case, because in the brain separates your senses into different places. So seeing's in one place and sound. And so the one spot of damage is where sound gets processed and organization. So we thought he was ADHD, and it turns out he's sound triggered, not light triggered. So it's also a learning process to try to distill down, you know, how, because the body is hardware, the brain is software. So it's been a journey.
He's doing well now?
He's amazing. Oh my gosh. He is smart and funny. And I mean, I've got two lovely sons, and my younger son, the way we found out about my older son's epilepsy was my older son was driving his brother home, 17 and 13, and a sound happened, and my son had a seizure in the car. My older son was driving. Luckily, he was in the right-hand lane on the Truman Parkway. And again, another little angel moment, the woman in the car behind my son was yet another nurse.
Really?
Another magical nurse. Saw the driver go over. My younger son, who was 13, didn't know what happened, grabbed the steering wheel and got the car, you know, into the off lane on the side. And the woman behind stopped and called me. And then, of course, we got an ambulance. And that was the beginning of his journey.
Before that, you didn't know.
Well, and thank you for placing a nurse once again to save, I mean, it's like a cat with 9 lives.
Oh my gosh. And God bless all the nurses out there.
Yes. Thank you.
If no one's thanked you today or lately, we are thanking you today. Because
so that's, it's amazing.
Wow. What emotions stand out when you think back to those early moments when you held your little babies?
Oh, I don't think the human brain is prepared for parenting. Mm. Those the flood of happiness and endorphins is like nothing in the universe. And thank you, Mother Nature, for giving us that.
Yes.
Because some of us might just say, hey, I'm ready for another cup of coffee.
That's right.
But you look at that little human, and it's like nothing. It's like falling in love on a just an epic level.
I know it. It's so my kids always laugh because I'm, especially my daughter, she's like, Mom, why are you always staring at me? She's 22. I'm still staring.
Oh, you like, we'll never be in stops.
It doesn't.
It never stops.
We'll be in the car or wherever, my son too, and I'm just like, I'm just in awe. And they're like, why are you looking at me that way?
Because I love you.
Yeah, and I love you, and I just don't know where you came from. That's why I tell them, I don't know where you came from. I'm just so glad you're here. And you're just so beautiful, you know.
And I even like you.
I like you
as a person.
I'm amazed by you, and I'm always going to stare at you. I'm sorry. Sorry, not sorry.
Oh, I think parenting is the ultimate journey.
It is.
Everything else pales.
Yes. Cheers to
and
that.
And going back to creativity, oh my gosh, you cannot be a parent and not be creative.
You will figure it out if you're not already. You will, or maybe you'll be blessed with a creative child.
See, both.
Not everybody is so creative, but I was just sharing the other day with a friend of mine that when my daughter was young, she loved being creative with her hands, right? So she liked to put on fake nails, and she liked to make beaded necklaces, and she likes to paint, she likes to color, she likes to draw, she likes to do all these things. So it was easy to take her to a craft store and just spend $20 and she's happy, you know, come home and do things. My son is not that way at all.
So you know what that brings me to is...
Yes.
The concept that came up in the 70s of Gardner's different learning abilities, there's kinesthetic learners, there are auditory learners, and it's the same thing with creativity. There's people that are visually creative. There's people, like coming back to your husband, that's a person who interprets the world on a physical level.
Yes.
So all of those, once you figure out what your little human being, you know, what's their learning style, then you can interpret and work around them. But Gardner came up with these different intelligences, and it's really changed the education world.
Is there a book that you could recommend surrounding those concepts? Because I think that's really fascinating.
I can't think of a specific title, but if you just Google learning intelligences and Gardner, and you'll come up with a million different books.
Thank you. Okay, good
to
know.
And it's part of most special ed training includes all of this, because special ed teachers need to know what makes the little people special.
Yes. So good. But there's always so much more knowledge that we could all gain
surrounding
these things so that we can show up to help these people in our lives and our kids. And I love that. So I'll be Googling that later, if not sooner than later. What was something you wish somebody had told you before you gave birth? Maybe at the baby shower.
Oh, gosh. Well, we all had that, you know, what to expect when you're expecting.
Yes.
And let's see. As a parent, I think if you, I remember my mother telling me, oh, we didn't have car seats. We just took a drawer from the bureau and stuck it on the back seat and stuck you in it.
Really?
Yes.
Fascinating.
So I think for new parents, just common sense and don't overbuy. Instead of buying every gadget, because your child will outgrow them in a month or two, put the money in a 529 college fund. You'll be happier you did that.
That's great advice. Because, you know, you see these registries at baby showers that are just miles long. And it's just, you know, these companies keep coming up with new things to sell new mothers that they think they need.
Yeah.
So if you could think of just like five staple items that a new mother would need in her home, what would you say those five things would be?
Oh, gosh. A changing table.
Yes.
A convertible crib. And probably a stroller, because nothing's more fun than taking your little one out and walking them around. Oh, and maybe a baby backpack. And you can find a lot of that stuff in, you know, online or from friends. I think the irony of the baby industry, because the baby design industry, like the pet industry, is a gazillion dollar a year. So the thing about new parents is you're literally, Mother Nature is like nesting, nesting, nesting. So you're in your nesting, you like, oh, I need this, I need this, I need this. So
yes.
It's a very natural biological instinct.
You know, back to the stroller concept for a minute. I want to visit this with you for a minute. My kids were both in strollers. I used to swear by those strollers.
They're great.
They were. I thought they were great. But now looking back and after doing a little bit of research on what other moms do in different countries, I'm realizing now that the stroller wasn't great. This is just my opinion.
Really?
Mm-hmm. My opinion here. But I'm going to share it. A lot of other countries don't believe in the stroller, even in Africa especially. You go there, you don't see a stroller there. It wouldn't last because the moms hold the babies.
That's true.
Are always being held. They're not being pushed. And this is not to shame anyone. I'm also guilty of this. But what I see is a lot of moms put the babies in the stroller and they're pushing, but they have their earbuds in and they're listening to a podcast.
That's true.
They're not connecting with the baby. So who's that walk for? The mom or the baby? Because the baby's disconnected from you now. The baby is not in your arms being held, right? Not saying that the baby needs to be held all the time, but I kind of see the beauty in just carrying the baby. Like you said on that little papoose thing, the baby's with you. You're holding
when
the baby.
When they're
can
really
feel
little,
you.
It's probably easier to body carry them.
Yes, body carry. But maybe if you're at Disney World and you're walking hours and hours and you need to put your child in the stroller, I get that.
Also, with a funny thing, and this is where I wonder who's designing the strollers, is it would be so much easier if they're facing you.
Mm-hmm.
So they could see
you. A lot of them
you.
Are now.
Yeah.
Now they are. That they didn't used to be. You're right.
Because you're going through.
Yes.
And if you think about that little person, they're, all they can maybe is hear you.
Yes. Hopefully.
And not see you if they're face frontward, forward.
Sure. Something to think about. Did you talk to your kids when they were babies?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yes. Can we talk about that for a minute?
Yes.
Because I don't know if a lot of moms do that. Like actually have conversations with the baby.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
And I think that was part of the fun of learning early on. Oh, I have, you know, that sonogram. And you're like, oh, it has a blankety blank blank. That means it's a boy.
Yes.
Like, oh, that's a boy. And then suddenly, oh, I can give this person a name or all of that. Then suddenly they're a different kind of person. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. Have you found peace with what happened that day in the delivery room with your oldest son?
Yes. And I think that when families go through any kind of traumatic experiences can do any number of things to a family. Sometimes they tear a family apart. Sometimes they bring a family together. They always change the dialogue and how a family sees itself. So for my husband and myself and my two sons, we don't even think about it now because it's been 10 years. And I am very grateful that my sons are absolute best of buddies. I am just thrilled that they talk all the time. We talk all the time. And it's just been great. I mean, but yes, you definitely, you know, things happen in families, things happen to individuals. And then it's a matter of, how do you use that opportunity or how do you talk about that? So yes, not easy, but sometimes growth isn't easy.
Yes. You don't come off as a victim to me. You come off as someone
who's... I feel so grateful.
Yes.
I feel extraordinarily grateful to be a mom. I wasn't sure that would happen because
really?
I got married later in life.
Wow.
Having kids at 37 and 41. Let's use the last eggs in the basket.
That's brilliant. Well, it was all meant to be.
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel very lucky.
Oh, wow. I'm so happy for you.
I'm happy for you because
thank you.
You have the same...
Yeah, so fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
I had my daughter, I got pregnant with her when I was 24. And back then, I mean, no one was having babies like they are now, younger, at least not at that time. I'm sure in the 70s, of course they were. I was born in the 70s, so that was normal. But she was born in 2003. So it was just one of those things like young girls were not really doing that so much.
Well, they were told to go to college and get a job.
Yes, very much so. So it was one of those like, ooh, when I told my parents, they were shocked.
Like, okay, you know? We're taking a right turn down the road
yes,
now.
Yes, they were like, what? I remember my mom said, when I told her I was having a baby, the only thing she said was, oh, wow, that's a lot of work. That was her response. And I said, okay. Okay. I'll take that with a grain of salt. And sure.
And you've done it beautifully.
Yes, thank you. And it is a lot of work, but it's also a lot of pleasure and fun. And work is probably the last thing I would say it is.
Yeah.
If someone asked me, what's it like to be a parent? I would say work. I'd say there's some sacrifice. There's adjustment. There's patience, right? There's reward.
There's yeah. growing there's, up.
Yeah, there's blessings. So many blessings happen when you have a child in your life. You know, just even if you don't have a child in your life, and maybe you, like Deborah said, you didn't think you ever would have one. Maybe you have a niece or nephew that you could become closer with. Don't you think there's so much value in that?
I think that's a really interesting point. And I have, myself included, I have two or three friends who have sort of unofficially adopted people, young people from other families. I call him my foster son. He lives in Maine. And he lost his mother in middle school, and I consider him my third son by another mother, and he is 25 and living with his partner, and mm-hmm. I love them both,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure they'll be married sometime, and I cannot imagine our life or his life without us. When he graduated from high school a number of years ago, we went up to Maine, and because his parents weren't there. His mother's deceased and his father was elsewhere. So it felt like a huge honor to be able to be with him. And Sam and Teddy went and sat with him, one on each side of him. So I think that if you have enough love in your heart and you can have, you know, create a relationship. I have another friend who she and her husband were living in Hawaii, and this young man is actually older than her son. And he's now in Alabama, but his mother was a drug addict, and I don't know about his father, and she has considered him her son by another mother for years. And I have a third friend, and she and her husband are both doctors, and they have two of their own kids, and they've just kind of mentored, and they have there's a young man that he's in his 30s, along with their two kids. So there's space, if you have space in your heart, there's always ways to sort of expand. You know, your family is also who you choose. So
yes, it is. I hope everybody heard that out there. Because some people struggle with the people closest to them, and then they're not sure if they do have a choice, but you do. You get to choose who shows up in your life and how much of you give to those people.
Yeah.
That's a choice you always have. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Deborah, I want to share another quote with the audience. Everybody hang tight. I'm not going to give it away just yet. I'll see you in just a minute.
You are listening to your radio station, WRUU, which is presented by people just like you. People from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and other Savannah residents. Therefore, WRUU is your community radio station. So, won't you please help by donating whatever you can afford to help your neighbors stay on the air? Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station with a monetary contribution of any amount. Again, you can support your local radio station at WRUU.org. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Tim, the host of a show called Not Fade Away here on WRUU. Do you like the feeling of, oh, wow, I love this song, and I haven't heard it in forever? Then join me on Friday afternoons from 1 to 2 p.m. I play forgotten hits and songs that were good enough to have been hits but never made it. Let's keep great music alive together. Not Fade Away, Fridays at 1 p.m. here on WRUU.
General admission tickets are now available for the 2026 TEDx Savannah presentation entitled Shaping the Future at the Georgia Southern University Armstrong Campus Fine Arts Auditorium on Friday, May 15th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. General admission tickets are available until seating capacity is reached and includes lunch, seating, and complimentary parking on campus. General admission tickets are available at TEDxSavannah.com. Art Southeast is seeking applications for the Incubator Artist Initiative, which provides a local artist with a free studio at Art Southeast for 1 year in 2026. Applications for this unique opportunity aimed at supporting Savannah-based emerging artists are due by January 12th, 2026. There's no fee to apply. More information and applications are available at artssoutheast.org.
Welcome back to Parenting Room 101. I'm here with my friend Deborah. I want to share another quote from Deborah. She says, make art every day, and also hard, work hard, play hard, and breathe. Is that your quote? Is that your specific quote?
I know, it's so...
Tell me.
It's probably not original, but I haven't read it somewhere else. And yeah. And I love, don't wait, create.
Oh.
Because so many people think circumstances have to be just right to do this, or just right to do that, or I'm waiting, and I am just as bad as the next person at doing this because I have some projects that I need to take my own advice on and not wait and start.
I love that. And let me ask you something. Do you find that some people struggle to finish a project?
Yes, because a lot of times finishing a project is there's so much psychology to finishing things, whether it's a project or a relationship, or it's exciting. It's like the moment of flow, being in that moment of flow and then being out of it. And then, oh my gosh, where's my next project? Or what if this isn't perfect? Or so perfectionism is the killer of joy, and it's the killer of creativity, because people feel like, oh, what if there's a mistake, or what if I did something wrong? Or so, yes, people have a lot of anxiety, that, and it's very normal and it's natural.
I think people are afraid what other people are going to say most of the time.
That too.
I've heard, especially with authors of books, a lot of the books don't go through to publishing because of that anxiety. People are so concerned that it's not perfect and maybe somebody won't like it. And I know quite a few people in my life that have written books that have never published the book. They didn't take that final step because of those fears.
Well, it's a big final step to take, to take something internal and make it external and then have it out there and think, oh, I could get judged on this. Oh my gosh.
So people are going to always judge no matter what you do, whether it's positive or negative. And
that's true.
I think that all comes back to childhood too, and how you were raised. And were you raised, or were you praised as a child? Were you criticized? Were you shamed? Because all that's going to show up in your later life.
And again, to circle back to talking about, because we started out talking about letting your child make mistakes, learning that, hey, a mistake is okay. So whether it's an adult, like, oh my gosh, what if my painting or my project or whatever it is, or even when you're in the corporate world, what if my presentation has, I left something out, or I did a boo-boo in my PowerPoint? All of that can be worked through. I mean, I think about corporate jobs where I've in the past, and I remember where I had a new task to do. I mean, I was working at a local college, and I was told to, oh, I need to do such and such. Never did it. Had all this anxiety. Did it. Even today, I've never done a radio show. I woke up in the middle of the night and thought, what if I sound silly or weird or I laugh in the wrong place? So sometimes it's something that's new and different, and just jumping in. Like, I feel grateful to jump in today. This is all new to me.
Me too.
And so thank you.
It's my pleasure to have you here. I also agree with you. I think most people are afraid to use their voice because that is where most of us are judged, by what our voice is saying, what our thoughts are coming through us, right? So there's the judgment, like, oh my God. What are people going to think as I'm sharing what's inside and it's coming outside? And just like painting or anything else, right?
And sometimes we're our own worst judges.
Yes. Well, of course we are. Excuse me. I know most people that listen, most people that come on the show to be a guest, when they go back and listen to the replay, a lot of times I'll hear through a text, I said like 1,000 times. I'm so embarrassed. And I'm like, you know what? Guess what? I say lots of things over and over again, that I have this Philly accent. I can't shake it. I've just learned to embrace it. So, you know, you just have to embrace yourself, and it's okay. You're you, and people love you when you're just being yourself.
That's very true.
They love you the most when you're just being authentically you. And somebody today will appreciate something you have to say, for sure, or your gifts. And maybe today's the day you go home and just think, well, what am I really good at, or what do I really like to do? You know, maybe it's painting or baking or gardening.
Well, my takeaway is I was brave enough to come in here, mm-hmm. and I love hanging out with you. I love your vision. I love what you're doing. As the coach in me is going, rah, 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 go, go, because you have all these great projects and things.
Thanks.
I am so enjoying your journey as a person and being here and being able to participate in your journey and your professionalism is really kind of a cool, exciting thing to do. So
oh, I love
thank
that.
You.
Thank you. That was really sweet. Thank you so much
for that. Well, it's actually heartfelt.
It was. I felt it. And I think women, we can do this for each other. We can cheer each other on and support each other. And we should be doing that.
And as parents, to cycle it back to one of the key things is, and I think what's really interesting is having parent friends in different ages. Mm. I am 65, I'm semi-retired, I'm doing various different projects. I have friends who are 75 and 85, and then I have like young zippy friends like you who actually find me interesting.
Very.
I think.
Yes.
And having that latitude to be able to visit, oh my gosh, like today, picking up a coffee, and there's that young woman with her month-old baby.
Yes.
And what an extraordinary little moment that she's at the start of her parenting journey and being able to go back and stand there and say, oh my gosh, yeah. I remember that.
It's delicious.
Yes.
That's why women go crazy for babies, because they're
you just want to hug their little feet.
You do. And is it because we want to hold the baby, or is it because we want to enjoy that time with the child again?
Probably because, all of the above and more.
And more. Yeah, I know. It's just, it's all so precious. And don't rush it. You know, if that is your first child and they're just coming, you know, maybe they're just turning one or two, and people say, oh, the terrible twos and this and that. People are always going to say these things, but I never thought any of it was terrible.
No, it's all different.
It is.
And it's so interesting because the minute you think you figured it out, they change the game on. It's like, wait a minute, last week, oh my gosh, I have a funny little.
Yes, please.
My older son was crazy about Blue's Clues back in the day, and everything was Blue's Clues.
Mm-hmm.
So when he would get into middle school, and my younger son as well, he would say, oh, I know, blah, 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 I really like this, or, you know, I'm into a certain book. And I said, how about that Blue's Clues? He's like, Mom!
It was the embarrassment.
Yes. Oh, yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
See, that's the great thing about parenting, is you can actually kindly embarrass them.
Yes, you can. Oh, it's so fun. It's just fun. It is fun. It's supposed to be fun.
And the thing about parenting is whether they're your children, mm-hmm. my sister's son is adopted from Vietnam, and I was lucky enough to go with her. He's now a high school senior, and I went with her to Vietnam. And, oh my gosh, I have a funny story. We go to the orphanage. Really nice people, very nice people. And it turns out that most of those kids, there are about 10 kids, were all adopted to mostly families in the Boston area. So this group of kids have kept in touch with each other, including my sister did 23 and whatever it was, me,
right,
and found out that one of the other children in the Boston area is actually his cousin. But we go to the orphanage, and there's three little boys, another boy, and one of them is sitting there looking cross-legged like a happy little Buddha boy, adorable. And another one was asleep. And then there's this busy little boy over there. There's a cabinet, smashing the cabinet doors, trying to open it, turns his head. He looks at my sister and I said, that's your boy. And sure enough.
It was?
And he's, yes. I was like, the busy boy over there is yours. And yes, and he's been hers. So you don't even, I mean, parenting comes in all different shapes and sizes, whether you volunteer with young people. I have friends that have chosen not to have children.
Yep.
And some of them volunteer with kids. So young people, as long as you love them, it doesn't really matter where the love's coming from. Because if they feel safe and loved and cared for and heard, then you can have that. And that's all it takes to be you know, a parent in quotations.
I love the word heard, because I think that is something that a lot of us didn't witness growing up.
Right.
It's something that is taught and learned.
Well, it was
seen and not heard. It was the opposite. So, right. So that was a different generation.
A different generation.
And now that's the most valuable gift we can give a child, is to be heard.
Yeah.
You know, but my son and I have this little, I'll call it a game, that we play sometimes, where if I tell him, no, you're not watching any more TV, or no, you can't do something, he's like, hold on, Mom. He likes to negotiate, you know, hold on, Mom.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's great. I love it too. I'm like, all right, what do you got? He's like, Mom, you know the rules. I get to talk first. And when I'm finished, I will tap the table or the couch, wherever we're at, so that it'll be my turn as the mother to
That's
speak.
That's perfect.
I love it so much. So there's always room to talk. So even though yes, here's the rule, but if you have something else to say, well, we have time. I have plenty of time. Let's listen. So that's what happens. So I'll say, well, hold on. Remember 2 weeks ago when you said blah, 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 blah. You said this and I said, and a lot of times he's right. I did forget. Maybe I said something or the rule was different. And then I'll wait for him to tap on the table so I know it's my turn. And then I'll either agree with him or I'll stand firm on the rule.
That's fabulous.
But thank you. But either way, especially when I stand firm, I'll say, I heard everything you said. That's the word heard,
which,
right?
Which is acknowledging.
Acknowledging. So, I heard you. Yeah. And he knows I did, because I was present. I listened. Then, but I'll use the word but. I heard everything you said, but the rule stands. You're done with the television.
So you're doing exactly what in corporate life people are taught to do, which parents also do. Listen, acknowledge, respond.
Yes, and then everybody's happy.
And then everyone's happy. And I think tying this back to the concept of creativity and how your child learns, and I love that you call it a game, because mm-hmm. that's a non-judgmental participation form.
Yes.
What works for your child? I have two very different sons, and they think very differently, mm-hmm. and one's an apple, one's an orange. Mm-hmm. So how does the apple need to be spoken to, talked to, interacted? How does the orange need to be? And part of parenting is figuring out this, your kid's born, mm-hmm. they have an intact personality. You have the rest of your life to figure out who they are.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And I think the work starts with you as a parent. Figure out who you are. Work on diving deeper into your own temperament, your own personality.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yes. We are our own best, experiments, studies. Like, we need to get better at being ourselves and getting to know ourselves.
Also, it's really interesting, which is something unique to living with a child and parenting them, is as they go through their stages from elementary school or middle school or high school or college or post-college, mine are both post-college and they're working adults, you get to relive those particular chapters in your life, which is mm-hmm. a really interesting, and that was an unexpected experience as an adult. Like, oh, and you catch yourself thinking, when I was in high school, and I'm like, don't say that. It makes you sound like a fuddy-duddy.
Yeah.
But yeah, you get to re-experience your own childhood mm-hmm. and sometimes reformat and reframe it.
Mm. And just get better.
Yeah.
Just get better. I have one more question for you before we wrap up. We have about 2 minutes left. I'd love to know, what's the best lesson that your mom ever taught you?
Oh, gosh. There's so many. She taught me how to sew on a sewing machine. I think the thing a parent can give a child is to be themselves and don't be afraid to explore what that means and to understand that you are a unique individual because of the time you're born in and who you are and all of that, and that it's okay, and mm. that's all okay.
I know you have a great relationship with your mom. How old is she?
She is 86, wow. and she is here in assisted living in Savannah, so I see a lot of her. I'm in a three-generation sandwich. I have my mother, my husband, myself, and my son also lives here, and my other son's in Philly, so I'm very, very lucky.
Yes, you are. Well, it's been a pleasure having you today.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
Love to have you back anytime you want to come share all
Happy
the good stuff that
back.
You're involved with, Deborah. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening and for tuning in, and I hope that you walked away with as much as I did today by listening to Deborah share so many great golden nuggets about creativity. I just started playing the harp, by the way. So that's my
wow.
new, we'll talk about that later, but that is something I wanted to do since I was a little girl. And I just recently pulled the trigger and said, I'm going to do that now because it's still calling to me. So these things always call to us.
Create, don't wait.
That's right.
So perfect.
Don't wait. Absolutely. So thank you everybody for listening, and we'll see you at this time next Friday on Parenting Room 101. Have a great weekend.